Hi, thank you for still being here. So my study was about racial disparities in terms of stage of diagnosis in Nevada for cervical cancer. I have no relationships to disclose. So I wanted to kind of introduce some background, and I think this is not foreign to any of you. There has been a lot of documentation about racial disparities in stage and survival, especially between African Americans and whites. And this is kind of a diagram or conceptual model of how those disparities may occur or originate. And so African Americans, they tend to have lower educational level and lower socioeconomic status, and therefore they're more likely to be uninsured and have poor access to health care, and therefore they're more likely to probably be diagnosed at a later stage and have poor prognosis. Another pathway could be that the lower educational level might impact knowledge and attitudes, so they might have negative attitudes about screening, and they might have more likely to be to have non-adherence to screening and lower acceptance and use, and that of course again affects stage and prognosis. Another pathway could be that a lot of minority populations, they have cultural and personal barriers that again affect acceptance and use and adherence to screening. And in a lot of minority populations or underserved populations, they have very low early detection programs, and so if they're uninsured and they don't have access to early detection programs, so again, they're more likely to be diagnosed at an advanced stage. So again, between African American and white women, we see that African American women, they have a higher incidence of cervical cancer. They're more likely to be diagnosed at a later stage. They have poorer prognosis. They tend to have higher prevalence of HPV infection, but they actually have comparable rates of Pap tests. So the screening rates, they're actually very pretty similar between whites and African Americans. And this graph just illustrates the gap in incidence of cervical cancer between African American women and whites. And but the good news is we see that there is a downward trend of in cervical cancer incidence. And so there's good news and bad news. So we'll keep looking into how we can improve that. And for stage, of course, stage is a very important predictor for prognosis, and we can clearly see that if a woman gets diagnosed in at a regional distant stage for cervical cancer, they're very less likely to survive than if you're diagnosed at a localized stage. And I kind of want to talk about a little bit of history. You probably know more about the history than me, but the geographic distribution of African Americans in the U.S. is very diverse and has varied also throughout time. So here we can see that in the early of this century, African Americans moved out from the South and they went to the Northeast and a lot of metropolitan areas in the West. And recently, this is kind of from the statistics by the CDC, the distribution of African Americans in the U.S. So there's still half of them, they live in the South. And then the rest, they're distributed mostly in the Northeast and the Midwest. And then in the West, we have the lowest proportion, about 10%. They live in the west side of the U.S. And this shows a little bit what's the percentage change in African American population in the last decade between 2000 and 2010. And so the darkest spots show the highest percentage change, which means that those are the places where African Americans are actually moving to or migrating. And we can see that in the West, actually, recently, a lot of African Americans are moving towards the West. And for instance, in Nevada, the African American population has quadrupled between 1990 and 2010. So why I kind of talked about a little bit the geographical variation, because the purpose of my study was to see, to assess whether African Americans have a higher likelihood of advanced cervical cancer diagnosis compared to whites in a region where African Americans have kind of recently migrated to. And for that purpose, we used the Nevada Central Cancer Registry data, and we identified cervical cancer cases diagnosed between 1995 and 2008. And we modeled stage, localized versus advanced, on race, blacks versus whites. And we adjusted for age, marital status, insurance status, diagnosis period, and histology. So we conducted some bivariate analysis to look at frequencies of distribution of demographics by race. And we also conducted multivariate logistic regression to calculate the odds ratios of advanced stage between African Americans and whites. We also conducted a comparison analysis. We wanted to see whether whatever we find in Nevada, is it going to be the same elsewhere. And this year, the surveillance epidemiology and end results, 18 geographic areas, they represent 28% of the U.S. population, and Nevada is not part of SEER. So it was a good way to kind of compare whatever we find, is it the same trend as elsewhere. And so we used the same statistical analyses that we used for Nevada. So what we found, these are the table of characteristics, and I'm going to just tell you, this is a little bit of summary. So we had our sample included 964 white cases and 90 African American cases. The African American cases had a higher proportion of early age at diagnosis compared to whites. They were more likely to be single at diagnosis. They were insured through Medicaid, and they were more likely to be diagnosed at an advanced stage compared to white. They had a higher proportion of that, and they had a higher proportion of diagnosis between 2005 and 2008 compared to white. And these are the results concerning the multivariate logistic regression. And so we can see here that, of course, race ethnicity is our main predictor, so our odds ratio, and my other colleagues have defined what the odds ratio are, so 0.93, which means that African Americans are actually a little bit less likely to be diagnosed at a later stage compared to whites, although it's not significant. So basically there is kind of no difference between whites and African Americans in terms of stage of diagnosis in Nevada. And some other significant predictors were age, histology, and insurance. And this kind of says the same thing. But the interesting thing is that when we did the SEER analysis, we actually found that African Americans that live in the SEER area were 17% more likely to be diagnosed at an advanced stage compared to whites. And that was significant. So what's going on? You know, why didn't we find, you know, disparities, racial disparities in Nevada? I just want to kind of give you a little bit of demographics in Nevada compared whites and African Americans and Nevada and U.S. So we can see in terms of median household income for women, there's clearly a huge gap. either we look at it in Nevada or in the U.S. between whites and African Americans. The only thing is, when we do disparity score, so if we just divide the median income for the minority over the whites, the disparity score in Nevada is less than the disparity score in the U.S. What that means is just maybe African Americans in Nevada, although they still, you know, earn less than whites, but they earn a little bit more than African Americans elsewhere. And that was similar also for an insurance when we did that. And the thing here that kind of is worrisome for Nevada is the percentage that of women that have a pap test within the last 3 years. So we're kind of lag behind the U.S. Prevalence of pap tests. So what kind of possible explanation that we could have here? So when we have, you know, if in the U.S. we have whites, you know, blacks do a little bit less than worse than whites. So in for this to become like this, and either whites are doing worse or blacks are doing better. So the first hypothesis, maybe whites in Nevada are doing worse than whites elsewhere. And we can see that the actual pap test screening rates are a little bit lower in Nevada than in the U.S. And also, most of the early detection programs, they are scarce and they also target mainly minority populations. And maybe African Americans who have moved to Nevada, they maybe have better indicators than African Americans in the U.S. And so maybe African Americans in Nevada, they have they are experiencing a migration effect, kind of similar to foreign-born immigrants, and or maybe African Americans who decide to migrate to different places. Maybe they're selectively healthy. They're younger. They're looking for a job, you know. So those are some hypotheses of why we didn't find disparities. And so what has been done in Nevada is that we have a program, the Women's Health Connection, which offers free screening, pap tests, and mammograms for uninsured women ages 40 to 65. Although, again, this program, we're not sure if it targets, but it really has almost 3 out of every 4 women is Hispanic, so it really targets minority population. And in terms of HPV vaccinations for teens, it is shown that it's decreasing HPV infection prevalence, but again, the uptake of the vaccination is still low, and it's even lower in Nevada than in the U.S., and there is, again, a gap between whites and blacks. The Affordable Care Act is bringing free preventive services, free of cost sharing, so that may be helpful in the future to increase pap tests uptake. And also Nevada has is participating in the Medicaid expansion, which also has to offer preventive services free of cost sharing. So maybe that also will help in increasing pap test screening. And so what can be done next? Again, this is a recurring theme, and that we need to improve knowledge and awareness of cervical cancer risk factors and screening and frequency. This is something that everybody that works on this, the early detection field, is trying to accomplish. And specifically for Nevada, it will be interesting to learn what are these barriers that, you know, the early detection programs are kind of low, or the pap test screening rates are low in Nevada. We need to know what are those barriers to kind of try to address them. And it would be nice if you could also increase local funding to existing early detection programs. For instance, the Women's Health Initiative, Health Connection, is 100% federally funded, so there's absolutely no local funds that go into those programs. And again, the other recurring theme that we need to have clinicians be more involved in kind of providing information to patients about the importance of screening. And another future study that could be done is also to see the hypothesis of the migration health effect that we saw, that we hypothesized. It would be interesting to see if it exists in other cancer types or if it exists in even other health conditions. So that's pretty much it. My references. And any questions?
Okay, thank you to all the speakers for your really great presentations. At this time, we're going to open the floor to any questions for the speakers. Okay, in the back.
For that study, I could get the, because I remember reading that there were high levels of inflammation and they had specific indicators, but I can't remember offhand now, but I can get the information to you if you like. And the second question in terms of 1 and 2 and 3, so I'm not sure why that is, but I mean there are some studies that have shown graded relationships and then there are some studies that have shown relationships but not graded as was seen. So
it may be systemic inflammation. I think that's
sorry?
It may just be systemic inflammation. Just all over. That's usually something that happens with adverse
childhood
experiences. Just all over, a lot of neutrophils all over the body, which is usually an indicator of health overall.
I'm sorry, I was still on that.
I went to the first one. I went back to the first. Sorry about that.
Okay, are there any other questions?
Health effect is that, you know, to decide for, you know, anyone to decide to migrate to anywhere else, especially like changing states, you know, moving away from your family, you know, it's a big decision. So, and not everyone can do it. So people who are like, most African Americans, they have, where they grow up in the South, they have like a tradition of chronic, you know, low socioeconomic status. So if they want to stay there, maybe they are more inclined to have, you know, not very good health behaviors and so forth. So those who decide, they already probably have, you know, something different. So other minorities, this might be particular to African Americans because other minorities, they already kind of come from other places, so they have maybe that notion of migration is already kind of in there. So, but it would be interesting to look at it for other minorities as well.
Okay. Any other questions? I had a question for Mr. Tannenbaum. Your presentation, I thought you had really striking findings in terms of people in the higher SES categories having higher survival rates versus the lower SES categories. So I was just curious if there were any like future directions that you were going to take with that research based on those findings.
Well, that's a good question. I think that it actually most likely has to do with access to care. So okay. That would likely be for or better directed towards someone who could influence the area of, or, sorry, you said, sorry, I got confused for a second. It's probably best to just influence those people in the lower socioeconomic status to go to clinics where they can be treated better.
Okay.
I'm guessing. It's not even just access to a particular type of care. It's also access to doctors who are better for that particular type of care. So.
Okay. Great. Thank you. And I actually had one more question for Dr. Paris. So I thought your findings about the effect of marital status, it seemed like it was protective in terms of stage of cancer diagnosis. And you talked about having qualitative data to possibly, I guess, uncover or to look more into it. And I was just curious in terms of if that's an approach in terms of maybe asking questions as to what in what about marriage is really protective for that diagnosis of cancer stage.
Yeah, and I think that it goes beyond just, I think that social support, which I think is sort of my proxy measure through marriage, is more of the issue of, you know, how does that affect health in general? And in looking at, did it drive people to get screened? Is it the significant other, you know, saying you need to go get your checkup? I mean, what is it that drives people to be healthier that tend to have that social support?
Okay.
And with cancer, you know, early detection is the key. And so looking at the things that influence not only health behaviors, but then behaviors for screening and getting a recommended care.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks.
A question in the back?
On the marital status, it had a greater influence than socioeconomic status in your study, right?
Well, that's part of the analysis I'm going to conduct later, the decomposition analysis, to see which of, because those, all my variables that were in my model independently were also associated with stage of diagnosis. So socioeconomic status was also associated with that as well. And so I wanted to see which of those played a bigger role in deciding that, and that will be done through the decomposition analysis. When I looked at initial treatment selection, I found that socioeconomic status was also related. Those in the lowest socioeconomic status were less likely to choose a definitive treatment like surgery or radiation versus those with higher. So those people in lowest chose watchful waiting or hormonal therapy instead of the surgery or radiation, which tend to be the most expensive forms of therapy.
Hormonal therapy is usually last resort, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Having it together enough to migrate from one area to another is also a level of executive function.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, I'd like to let's give a hand for our speakers today.